For me, it's important for my kids to grow up with a strong Jewish and cultural identity and understand where they came from and what family members have sacrificed.
Hello, bonjour, shalom, and welcome to Culturally Jewish. I'm David Sklar.
And I'm Ilana Zakon.
On this week's episode, we sing along with Eric Warner, Aaron Hall, and Jason Craig as they prepare to release their new concept album reflecting the good old days of Jewish Toronto life.
Mama always wanted me to be a doctor, but I became an artist and that really shocked her. Now I'm interviewing people in the biz, pros and newish, but all of them are artists and they're culturally Jewish.
So David, you grew up in Montreal and you live in Calgary now. I don't know too much about Calgary's history in terms of the architecture and the Jewish community, but I do know in Montreal, there's a lot of Jewish roots here. Where I am currently, my grandparents basically grew up around the corner. And there's a lot of history there. Whenever my grandfather drives around this area, he'll point out like a little dépanneur, which is like a corner store. That's what we call it in Montreal. And he'll be like, look at the little like lion figure on the top. That used to be a movie theater. And it always blows my mind. I found out that the park down the street from where I live now, my grandmother used to skate on around it when she was 15 years old, when my grandparents first met. And like, just knowing that history makes me feel super, super connected to where I live. Do you have that feeling for Montreal? And how does that translate to Calgary, where you're not from and you don't have family from?
You know, that's a really interesting question. Obviously, I spent 28 years of my life in Montreal. And as you mentioned, yes, it's so fantastic to walk by or drive by places in Montreal. I'm thinking of one spot in particular near National Theatre School of Canada, just across the street from the metro. It's a house now, it's condos, but right above there are Stars of David, and it used to be a former synagogue.
Oh, cool. I was literally just there the other night. Yeah, I didn't know about that spot. Yeah. I know Jews used to live in that area. That I knew, like the early immigration wave, yeah.
So obviously my roots are very deep. You know, my grandparents in Montreal, and I would listen to a lot of their stories about what it was like growing up back in the 20s. My grandparents had a store just on Mount Royal, right across the street from the church. And my grandparents loved telling the story of back in the day in the 20s and 30s, their customers would come shopping at their store right after church service on Sunday. And they would always tell my grandparents, you know, the priest said, do not shop at the Jewish-owned businesses, but we like you and we trust you, so we're going to continue shopping despite what our clergy says. So that was just one story in our folklore of our family that used to be we used to always smile and enjoy that. Obviously, switching to Calgary, I don't have these roots. It's a very different Jewish experience here, right? The Jews came a bit later. It's not as prominent in a bunch of these places, but there are. There are these historical important Jewish places, like there's the little synagogue on the prairie that had this whole story about it moving around.
Little synagogue? Is that what it's actually called?
The Little Synagogue on the Prairie, and it's currently set in Heritage Park, which is this old-timey park where, you know, a lot of families go on the weekends to sort of explore what Calgary used to be like in the good old days. And there is prominent, sort of as you enter it, one of the first spots is this synagogue, and they have two people who go through the history of what the Jewish community was like in the West and what the synagogue meant to them and how it was the place where everyone came together. So it's obviously less so, it's not as prominent, but you find these little hidden gems here in Calgary.
I feel like I think about the topic of old versus new a lot. I don't know if it's happening out where you are, but certainly in Toronto and even in Montreal, you see so many new buildings going up. And it's in these moments where I'm like, oh, maybe my progressive nature doesn't apply to architecture, because it makes me sad to see all the newness when we have so much, you know, there's all these gorgeous Montreal style buildings that are really old and so unique. And then you just see these block skyscrapers that are so boring. And I'm like, why can't we do something interesting? And I mean, Montreal does a little bit of a better job than Toronto. Sorry, Toronto, but it's true. You know, there are some cool buildings downtown, but like there's something that makes me feel a bit sad at that change. And I'm glad that Montreal is a city that doesn't knock down architecture as much these days. And I can still walk around and see, you know, I also had like a grocery store in the family at some point. I know it was somewhere near here. I don't know exactly where. And my grandfather was in the schmata industry. And like, there's a lot of homages to those buildings. Some of them even have plaques outside that say like, this used to be a Jewish garment industry building. So I guess it just makes me wonder, like, in terms of migration and evolvement of Jewish community, Like, how do we move forward, keeping in mind the past, but then also creating space for the future? That was actually a big question that came up at the Jewish Futures Conference that I went to in Toronto. I think I brought this up after I came back from the conference, but I thought it was really interesting when Ken Delpinkney was saying how we are a people of memory. Like, we are a people of the past. We're a people of the book. We're all about where we've been. And so Jewish futurism is like taking that, but then finding innovation within it. What do you think about all this, David?
I think these are fabulous questions. I think as the younger generation, a lot of us are the third or fourth generation of Jewish immigrants who have come over to Canada and North America. And I think it's a struggle sometimes for us to find out what parts of our Judaism are we going to continue to hold on to as our older generation, as our grandparents and our parents start passing away. How do we move forward into this futurism, as you describe, and how do we continue to hold on to the things that we deeply cherish, but also want to honor as an homage, as you said, in our past? And one example is with the people that we speak to today. They've done this kind of homage in the form of a concept album as we talk to them to explore why did they want to make this, honoring their grandparents and the good old days of Toronto, as I said. And as you can hear in our conversation, as we talk to Eric, Aaron, and Jason, to sort of say, maybe this is one example of moving forward in the future to sort of look back on the past at the same time.
Let's take a listen.
You could buy a chicken off of Nassau Street. You could walk the market with your own 2 feet. You were part of something so special and sweet. The heartbeat of community was so unique. I grew up here and my parents did not. It didn't matter, we had a bit more water to the pot.
Aaron, Eric, and Jason, thank you for joining us today. So our first question here is, can you briefly explain your concept album, A Song for Ira by Harold and Ruth? What is this all about?
The album was written by Jason and myself last summer. And the idea behind it was that an adult son gifts his parents songwriting lessons and a recording session, and they end up writing an album about their lives growing up in Toronto, and more specifically, their lives growing up Jewish in the city and just their experiences watching the city change over decades of time, and their family growing as well.
And Jason, how did you two come up with that idea? It's very unique to have it written by these fictional characters of the grandparents. Where did you guys come up with that?
That's a funny and interesting story. I'm sure Eric would be happy to explain it to you.
Jason and I have been best friends since we were teenagers since high school. And he is so kind to at times have gone along with some of the weird ideas that I've had. We've always wanted to work on music together. He's played in different bands. I've played in bands and grown up music over the years. But in this case, I had an idea of wanting to create characters and a concept album because it allowed us to tell a story in a very different way, where it was more kind of thematic opposed to maybe individual songs and ideas. And when I explained it to Jason, he was on board. So we worked on the music and the lyrics together. Like, I came in with a lot of the ideas and lyrics. He made me far less verbose than I am. And he worked on the music. So it was really a team effort. And then because we wrote the music, we don't actually sing on the album. My sister Erin came in and was so kind to record the female vocals on the album. And another friend that worked with us to record the male vocals. And Aaron, maybe you can speak this too, but of all the weird things I've done musically, Aaron, I believe, was most attracted to this idea and what we were trying to do because it resonated. It was kind of connected to our family as well.
So then, Aaron, let's go right to you. What did resonate with you? Why did you want to join and be a part of this experience?
Yeah, I mean, like my brother said, he's had lots of wacky ideas. This one was less wacky, more endearing. You know, we grew up Jewish. My Jewish identity, I won't speak for everyone else, but my Jewish identity is very important to me. And we had, you know, a really wonderful family, still have a wonderful family growing up. Our grandfather lived to almost 103. And so he really, I think, is like much of the inspiration behind the album. He saw Toronto change, Kensington Market, you know, grew up in that area. Had different businesses, and it was fun to kind of tell his story now that he's gone and we miss him. So it was kind of fun to relive some of those memories. And I really love the music, you know? They wrote nice music, so it was fun to be part of.
Is this almost then a tribute to your grandfather, your Zadie, where you sort of say, as you said, he's no longer with us, but he lived to 103. So was he sort of experiencing maybe this kind of thing as, I don't recognize this community anymore, it's not like it used to be, and was that sort of a loss for him, or was that sort of an expression of things change and we have to adapt and move with the times, do you think?
I think it was actually much of the latter. I think it's funny because, you know, I think often we think, oh, people get old and they get set in their ways. But he really adapted as he got older. He was very open. You know, he took me to all kinds of cultural events and interesting lectures and things about intermarriage and, you know, was very accepting of when I dated someone Jewish, when I didn't date someone Jewish. And he was always very involved in the Jewish community. So I don't think he was ever unhappy with things changing. I think he really went with the flow. And actually, probably that's part of his secret to longevity. He was just kind of a happy guy and interested in the world around him. And I think that's what makes you an interesting person.
And what part of Toronto did your grandfather grow up in?
Well, he lived near Kensington Market, and then he also lived around St. Clair West. And then for much of his later life, he actually lived on King West. He lived in a condo on King West, and he was, you know, very hip, fitting in with the people around him, you know, smiling at everyone who walked by. And he walked everywhere. Also another secret to his longevity.
And Eric, when did you start writing this album? Was he alive for any part of it?
No. So the lyrics were written mostly last year, and Jason and I put this together pretty quickly over just a few weeks. Had a few iterations of, you know, what we were intending to do initially, trying to figure out, how to make it sound like literally from an age standpoint of like, when you're thinking about two characters opposed to necessarily two voices. And I think that almost took a little bit longer, but once we got into the groove and writing of it, I mean, all of it came together very quickly, probably compared to other projects I've worked on. And like, even we tried working on one idea that just didn't go anywhere for one song. We're almost done with our writing session for the day and wrote one of the songs in literally 3 minutes. And I'm very proud of that song, but equally, it's something that came together quickly because I think we had an idea in mind.
Did you want to say something, Jason?
I suppose I should probably say something. A couple of tracks on there, like Carefree Days, What's on the Radio. I mean, it all resonates with me. Yeah, I grew up Thornhill, Jewish kid. So like, I don't know, I was at the end of the whole thing, I think I was pleasantly surprised of how connected I felt to like the lyrics and the music, and just happy out of sort of like, that's a crazy idea, let's do it kind of thing. Let's just embrace the random and see what happens kind of thing. And I'm glad with how everything turned out.
So first of all, Aaron, you mentioned that this was not one of your brother's wackiest ideas. Now I really want to know, what are some of those other wacky ideas compared to this family album written by imaginary grandparents?
Well, yeah, Eric.
Be prepared.
Go ahead.
Be prepared.
So there's many. Like I've been in a lot of bands and kind of toured all over the place, and everything has kind of started like very much to see if I could do it and get away with it. But for another project, another kids project or family project, made my own macaroni for our group Macaroni Birthday that Jason also played live with.
I have a good one.
Yeah,
he had a band called Dollarama. They bought things That's from the dollar thinking. Store, and they like played with it, broke them on stage, whatever, and they got attention to the point where Dollarama sued them for using their name.
Issued a cease and desist. But one was not going to necessarily confuse going to one of our concerts with the shopping experience. But yeah, we got a lot of press. We got invited and flown to a lot of festivals, which was crazy. And that definitely was a weird one. Like I've worked on a lot of entertainment and brand type initiatives for the last 20 plus years. So I've programmed events for Pepsi inside of a Pepsi shaped venue, a Pepsi bottle, I should say. I've made my macaroni. I've made records filled with Doritos because I run a record label as well. x-ray records, wax cylinders, run a music education and language project on vanishing and at-risk languages. I guess adhere to the idea or ideology of, like, if you don't try, you don't know. And failure, you know, also breeds understanding and strength and a willingness to learn. So I am always willing to see what could happen. And fortunately, in this case, Jason came along with for the ride and was like, all right, let's do this. And Aaron also was totally cool with it. So yeah, I've done a lot of weird things, but that's it also makes it fun and interesting.
You definitely seem like an outlier, Eric, with all the things that you've done with your record label company, We Are Busybodies. How did that originally come to be?
Can I field them?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know if this was the starting point, but I remember in high school, Eric made a zine, a music zine, and he would be interviewing these bands that'd be rolling through town, like these like name bands. And I was like, you're in high school, how are you doing this? Like, and I don't know like where things sort of progressed from that, but he's always been very enterprising, the right word? I don't know, ambitious?
Thanks. I care about you too. We Are Busybodies started in 2005. The first band I was in was breaking up, and we had recorded an album, and I wanted to release it, but I knew other labels wouldn't touch anything that was breaking up because it was a local band compared to something more established. So that was kind of the catalyst for starting the label. And then the label has grown to the point where initially I used it as a springboard to get a lot of the acts we work with signed to bigger labels like Sub Pop or Ninja Tune or major labels. And then I realized I wanted to keep the artists I was working with and helping develop. So now, like, many of our acts have been nominated for Junos, ECMAs, WCMAs, had the music appear on radio, films, television, you name it. And one of the more prolific, from a volume standpoint, labels, I would say, in Canada, last year releasing 49 releases between two labels. And this year is probably going to be similar, if not more. So again, it keeps it interesting and challenging, and the label continues to evolve and grow. And now we have three labels under the umbrella: Busy Buddies, the label that just put out or will put out Harold and Ruth, Record label, which is all reissues, and then another one launching soon. We work on all kinds of really, you know, unique projects, and it makes it definitely more fulfilling, if not stressful.
So I want to ask more about that. As you just described, you've worked in a lot of different genres. You've worked with a lot of different types of artists. What's the family music market like? Is that something that you always wanted to do at some point, or just sprung up on you because you had this idea? Like, what? Tell me a bit more.
I have kids, so I make up songs for them to eat their like fruit, vegetables, take a bath. So that was like the last project, Macaroni Birthday, and we put out two albums and played in live once because of COVID, and Jason played live with that. And then there actually is, surprisingly, while niche, a pretty robust children's market, especially digitally, because I don't know where this is going to resonate and land. I hope with lots and lots of people, but a lot of children's music can be repetitive, which is what it's supposed to be, but it can also be pretty challenging to listen to. So I tried with the last project, tried to write a bunch of albums that were really great for kids and tolerable to parents, whereas this project is meant to be, you know, for people of all ages and community, and not necessarily being limited by any specific constraints. But believe it or not, libraries pick up a lot of CDs across North America, so you could probably check out Harold and Ruth in about a month from many libraries. And then on the physical retail side, there are specialty stores that cater to family audiences. But a lot of probably how people will hear this album and other ones that we will release, hopefully, as Harold and Ruth and other Busybody releases, are heard through DSPs or streaming, simply because that's how people or families listen to music. It could be in a car driving somewhere. It could be, you know, at home. But there's a higher likelihood that someone's using Spotify over a CD. And with that, I think a good anecdote, Jason probably can say more succinctly is the experience his son had with RCD.
So your first and the first song where we grew up as the chicken song. And it was like, he's 2.5. Okay? And he's like, play the chicken song, play the chicken song. And we have a physical CD player I held on to, and he's loving putting the CD in, taking it out, skipping the songs and talking to it. But even though it's not like voice enabled or anything, he sees us like, you know, talking to our phones. He's like, play chicken song. But he loves singing along. Like, he loves singing along. Family Vacation was like, he just went after I'd play it for him, he'd go, again.
Classic.
So say, again, what? And he'd say, again, please. And then after I got the please, I'm like, okay, I'll play it again. Play it again. No, he's really into it, which is another nice thing we've been able to bond over musically, because I played him some music from my last band. I think because some of it is like more in the minor key, and I was singing in like a falsetto voice, it made him start to cry. So it was nice to have something that was like, yeah. And so we stick with like Harold and Ruth right now for Callum.
And Aaron, I know you guys did a debut performance of the album at the Bloor JCC on Family Day. As one of the singers of this, did you have like a swarm of kid fans come up to you, like thinking like, oh, you're the voice of my music?
Well, I think it was brand new music to them, but we did have a nice, I'd call it mosh pit up at the front of little kids dancing, which was so cute because, so I used to sing at Baycrest, which is an old folks home here in Toronto. And the thing that little kids and older people have in common is they can't fake stuff. So we could tell that they were actually having a good time. They were dancing, you know, they were into the music. They weren't crying. So I think our debut performance was a success.
In our conversation with all three of you, I think we spent a lot of time both looking back as well as looking forward, right? The previous generation to your children's next generation. Where do you see this kind of moving, both in the broader sense? I'm thinking of Toronto. What do we think Toronto's Jewish community might look like in, say, 50, 60, 70 years? As well as, do you think that your kind of music, this family music, the songs that you've put together for this album, do you think it's still going to ring true in 50, 60, 70 years in terms of what this Jewish community looks like?
I'll jump in first, maybe to say, like, I think it's always changing. It's hard to necessarily have a whole lens of what will be 50, 60 years from now. Like, I think from the perspective we tried to write from, it was seeing and literally hearing different things change. Like, we reference radio and records and a lot of mediums that, you know, exist and are still, you know, very prominent, but may not be there the same way. So I think some of the reference points could differ. I think that ultimately there is a core to this, or like, the music is grounded in that it's community based, it's culturally significant, or intends to be, and is meaning to bring people together. And hopefully that connective thread exists, you know, 50 years from now. Like, for me, it's important for my kids to grow up with a strong Jewish and cultural identity and understand where they came from and what family members have sacrificed. And like, even moving to North America, because like, if you go back a few generations, like, people, like, our families lived in Europe or were Orthodox rabbis. So like, it's very interesting to see just even generationally how things change.
I think, though, the themes are universal, you know? It's like about Jewish identity, about family, about children. I think those things will still feel the same, even if, like Eric said, the reference points change. I think the meaning in the song will continue to resonate. I also think in terms of the Jewish community changing, like how it'll look in 50 years, I feel like we're at a moment in time where, you know, we're feeling pretty alienated with the current situation. And I think it brings the Jewish community closer together, even though, you know, Jews are from all different backgrounds of religiosity or how they identify. But I think our identity becomes important as we feel more alienated. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Jewish community here continues to grow and get stronger. At least that's my hope. And hopefully we don't feel as alienated as time goes on.
Well, one of the themes of passing sort of moving to the next generation. Like in the last song on the album, What's on the Radio, and how it ends with the lyrics, it's time, you're ready, I love you. And I think that, yeah, like, I don't know what it's going to look like in 10, 20, 50 years, but I definitely sense like a strengthening or coming together that I haven't experienced in my lifetime before.
Well, Aaron, Jason, Eric, thank you so much for coming on Culturally Jewish.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
We're going on vacation, gonna have lots of fun. When we reach our destination, we'll hang out in the sun. First, we'll pack up the car, we'll bring lots of snacks. We'll have to stop several times to get gas or relax. Our trip is just in reach, we're driving with the family. On vacation, we hope everyone goes happily. It's a long drive, take a look at the scenery. We have to drive through PA, it's full of greenery. When we finally get there, we'll be with friends and family. 10 days by the beach, well, I hope you brought your sunscreen or something to read, like Popular Mechanics and Archie Comic or National Geographic. We're now on a trip, no longer out of reach. We're spending time with friends and family in Myrtle Beach. We're now on a trip, no longer out of reach. We're spending time with friends and family in Myrtle Beach. We're now on a trip, no longer out of reach. We're spending time with friends and family in Myrtle Beach.
Alana, what is going on in your Jewish arts world this week?
So there's an event that I'm really stoked about. It's called Shuk to the Core. Shuk as in like Israeli market. It's going to be going up on Monday, March 11th. And the description is, come shop, support, and meet Israeli artists and vendors from the most affected areas in southern Israel. You will find everything from art, jewelry, kippot, literature, and much more. So that's happening at Federation CJA in Montreal. And I'm hoping to check that out. It's a very fun concept as a way to raise money.
Something similar in the same vein, I would say, is on April 1st here in Calgary at Temple B'nai Tikva. It's called A Musical Hug from Israel, where you can learn about the music of Israel released after October 7th. They're going to invite...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they're going to invite a Israeli music expert and radio personality. His name is Josh Schron, and he's going to take us into a deep dive into songs released after in the weeks after October 7th to sort of help connect or reconnect to the vibe of Israel in one of its darkest hours. And really the question he's going to ask is, how is music helping Israelis heal from this unspeakable tragedy? You'll get to hear songs, you'll get to watch videos, and you hopefully will be inspired.
So Purim is coming up, and there are plenty and plenty of interesting Purim parties happening all over the country. One that I wanted to shout out is a co-production between the Museum of Jewish Montreal and the Milan Chabura. On March 21st, they're going to be having a big party, which will have a costume contest, local vendors, music, and even a drag performance. So be sure to check that out. The Purim party of the Museum of Jewish Montreal.
You know, Alana, I think we're thinking in the same vein right now, because my next one is also for Purim. It's taking place...
It is Adar Bet.
It's taking place in Toronto at the Miles Nadal JCC, but it's called the Four Faces of Purim, Drag Makeup Mastery. So in the season of masks and makeup and Mishloch Manot, in addition with the LGBTQ+ community at the J, they're going to have a drag makeup workshop. They're going to feature four archetypal characters from the Purim story. You're going to learn how to get made up for the annual reading of the Megillah. As they sort of say, everyone can be anyone this time of year. Will you be a queen, a king, a villain, or something else entirely? Included in that will be drag artists Boy Vey and Josie, I think, who will demonstrate their takes on these characters while sharing more about the story of Purim in the joyful spirit of the holiday.
I feel like drag performance and Purim have now become like interchangeable. Almost every event that I saw had some drag component to it. It's the trend.
I think it's going to be here to stay, because it is just the holiday where you can be whatever you want to be and be free, and then have a bit of Manischewitz on the side too.
Well, we will let you know more about other Purim events coming up in our next episode. And in the meantime, David, I'll catch you later.
What's on the radio? Paul, John, George, and Ringo. What's on the radio? Listen to songs or our favorite shows. Driving in the country or listening at the table. hearing sounds by turning the dial. The music is yours to enable. My dad liked Alan Sherman. Our kids like Pee-wee Herman.
Harold likes shows with learning. But I will listen to anything.
Sitting in the living room, listening to War of the Worlds.
Culturally Jewish is hosted by me, David Sklar, and
Ilana Zakon.
We're produced and edited by Michael Freeman, and our theme music is by Sarah Siegel-Lazar. We're a member of the CJN Podcast Network. To support our work and everything the CJN does, visit the cjn.ca/donate to make a monthly donation and receive a charitable tax receipt.
Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.
So I give this song to you, to let you figure out what to do. It's time, you're ready, I love you. It's time, you're ready, I love you.